Hi guys, Ali here. Thanks for listening to this special edition of the Not The Top 20 podcast. NTT20 pod meets Paul Heckingbottom. Our episode with Michael Appleton went down so well, we wanted to do another one, and we found another young, talented British head coach looking to get back into the game, looking to get a job either in the EFL or elsewhere. The reason we love sitting down with these guys is to get a real openness from them. I think the idea from us is that this wouldn't seem like your average media interview that you might see in the mainstream, but to try and get more of a feel for these guys as people, to talk to them slightly more informally and to hear about their experiences, how their experiences have shaped them, their philosophies, their opinions, and much, much more. Paul Heckingbottom, in that sense, certainly didn't disappoint. Straight from the off, Paul opened up about his time as a youth team player at Man United, his time at the end of his career where he almost fell out of the game altogether. And then, of course, we get into his time at Barnsley, the first few months winning twice at Wembley in his first 5 months as a head coach, an amazing time. And then a really interesting year and a half, 2 years with Barnsley, successful for sure for a lot of time, but also very difficult, often behind the scenes as well. We obviously then talk about some of the players that Paul managed, many of whom are in the Championship and some even in the Premier League right now. One of my favourite parts of this discussion is Paul's tactical conversations. Again, not the sort of thing that you might hear in other sit-down interviews like this, but we went quite in depth about how he set that Barnsley team up to succeed both in League One and in the Championship. Of course, we then talk about Paul's move to Leeds at a difficult time for Barnsley and a move that caused a lot of consternation. We talk about Paul's 4 months at Leeds as head coach, his departure from Leeds, his thoughts on that spell and what he's learned from it, and what he thinks of this season's Leeds United under Marcelo Bielsa. I can't thank Paul enough for giving me so much of his time, but also for being so open, so engaging, so interesting. And we really hope that you'll enjoy this episode. If you do enjoy it, please do retweet, please do share, please do share amongst your friends who you think might be interested. We'd love to do more of these as well. So if you know of someone who would make for a brilliant NTT20 meet, please do tweet us at NTT20pod. Enjoy this one and thanks for listening. Absolutely delighted and honoured as well to be joined by Paul Heckingbottom. Former professional footballer who played as a left back for a number of Football League clubs, most notably Darlington, Norwich, Bradford, Sheffield Wednesday, Barnsley, Bradford again, Mansfield, better known to us on the Not The Top 20 podcast as a former head coach of Barnsley and of Leeds United. Paul was famously included in our top 10 managers under 45 list from 2017. You probably weren't even aware of that, but you were very much on it. And it's brilliant for us to be able to sit down with you. You've been so heavily involved with the football that we've been covering twice weekly over the last few years. Paul was last seen prowling a touchline in Myanmar in May. Since leaving Leeds, Paul, you've had some time off, presumably for the first time in about 20 years.
Yeah, and it is the first time, so it's been interesting. And you go through lots of different phases of it, I think. So I'd always plan, because I was never trying to be or set out on my pathway to be a manager, head coach. I wanted to be like a youth coach, under 18s coach. That was my dream job, what I wanted. I only managed to do it for a few months, then got pushed up and sort of bullied and made to take different roles. And I'm glad, because as soon as I took the head coach's role, it sort of for me, and I really enjoyed it. But if you've not been preparing for it, I was preparing then as I was doing it and making little notes and things in areas that I knew I needed to get better at, wanted to look at further. And over the 3 years, especially in the last year, I was always saying, look, first time I'm out of work, I want to get better at these things, I want to look into this, I want to do that. And the day after I got sacked by Leeds, someone spoke to me about taking another job, and that was the difficult one where I thought, do you know what? Oh, I think I should go straight back in. But I stuck to what I said, and family and representatives said the same. Well, you always said you were going to be it for a long haul and wanted to get better and look into things. So that's what I did. And the first few 2-3 months, it felt like I was still at work. I had a few sort of making sure I had 3-4 days either out or in the office and going over things, looking at different things for myself, and felt like I was still at work. And I actually thinking, well, this is actually good for you.
Yeah.
First time I really reflected, first time I really looked at how I work best, about what I need to do to be in that space, about my bad habits that you're not really aware of and what can affect you. So I felt like I was getting better, but then you tick that list off and then it's like, right, now what?
Are you quite good at, or were you quite good at, you know, you're talking about bad habits. Are you all right accepting those when they pop into your head? Do you instantly go, oh no, I did that because, and come up with an excuse. Which is the sort of thing I might do.
Now, but... Yeah, and I would have when I played, and that's a footballer's worst. But like, so one of, and that's another reason really, when I got into the coaching and the education side and going back to uni and looking at all sorts, I really did commit to getting better at everything, and I enjoyed it. So you can't hide from yourself really, can you, if you want to get better? And yeah, I am pretty self-aware anyway. I can pick things up, but it's a different role when you're a coach. You know, you've spoke to lots of people about, you are under the pump, you are the person that people look to, you have got to hide things a lot, you've got to...
And you didn't, from what you said just at the start there, you didn't think that's what you fancied at the start, but, you know, no, in between playing and
When I played, when I was younger especially, I felt like I was playing because I wanted to be a manager at the end of it.
Yeah.
But then you meet people in the game who, for me, are fools and don't deserve to be there. And I got a little bit disillusioned with it at the end, thinking that, listen, for me, I'm not dealing with these people anymore. I actually started plumbing.
Really?
When I was at Bradford, I went back to Bradford, and it was Dave Weatherall and Wayne Jacobs who were on the coaching staff then. They were playing when I first went there. Who said, well, what are you doing? Because I'd start my badges early and let them lapse. What are you doing? I told them why. Yeah, but don't do that. Like, you're letting them drive you out of the game. Why don't you stay in the game, surround yourself with good people, and help to get rid of these people you don't like? And it was like a light. I was like, do you know what? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And it is. I still think about it now. I'm talking about it to you. It's like a little thing that that is important to me. And that was it. That's when I started everything again. And... so I weren't really, and then from that point it was coaching, and then I was working with younger players. I had really strong youth coaches when I was younger who had a big impact on me, not really the football as well, but, you know, you remember things are said, and I think you're at a really important stage in your life.
I mean, you were a youth team player at Manchester United.
Yeah, so it was Eric Harrison and Pop Robson who were my coach, and then I had Pop again at Sunderland when I went there.
And what were you, class of 94? Or what would you in relation to that?
Yeah, well, the boys. Well, Giggsy was 92, weren't he? The other ones.
I think Beckham was 91, maybe.
Yeah, but in Nev.
So you might have been.
We were 93.
Phil.
Yeah, I was Phil. Neville's my age, so we were 95.
Okay.
So great grounding, really good play, and that's the reason I signed. I were under no illusion. I remember saying to my family, I weren't particularly going there to get in their first team. I was going there because I loved the place. My experiences when I'd been was they're well looked after. Coaching was great. The players you were playing were great. I just liked the atmosphere. Mm. And where better to get an education, if you like. And yeah, it definitely helped me in my career. And I see you get them feeling you're going forward. I'm thinking, right, that's what I want to pass on. And if I might be working with 20 boys and there might only be two of them be pros, but the other 18, I still like to think I can make them better people and make them help them to make good decisions and good choices. And I enjoyed that. And do you know what? The approach is not much different for me first team. Still that same valuing people, I think. And that's the bit I enjoy, and that's the bit I miss most when I'm not working as the players.
Were you still sort of jumping ahead a lot? But there's so much to cover and so many interesting topics that we'll touch on, but the squad that you had at Barnsley when you became head coach, when Lee Johnson moved to Bristol City, that was a very young squad, wasn't it? Or with a lot of young players at least, and a couple of older pros as well, like Adie White, and I suppose Adam Hamill was one of the senior players as well. So that in a way was not too much of a removal from working with a youth team.
Yeah, and I'd sort of, the benefits I had there, I knew the club inside out, knew the ownership inside out, knew the players inside out, knew the fans, do you know what I mean? And no one could tell me anything I didn't know about the club and the players, really. So I was well prepared, if you like, to take over. But it's still interesting. I probably, until I took over, I probably undervalued the 2 years I'd had with those players, you know, the first team players, which I saw when I did take over. I'd already got that relationship with them. And we got promoted that season. Of the 18 that went up, we'd lost 9 of them by the start of the next window anyway, so it was like a whole new squad, if you like.
Yeah.
But that's when I noticed the difference. To the new players who came in, I was gaffer, and I could see them a bit more wary of me, standoffish. To the players who I'd known 2 years, they were exactly the same, and that was the first point where it was like, you did feel like that.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because there are some, you hear some stories of it being the other way around, and that being an issue for some people. I guess it's down to character. I mean, famously, I think it was at Chelsea when Vialli took over, having been a player, and he decided he didn't want to be matey with the players at all. He wanted to be the big dog, and they all just thought he was an idiot because of that, and then they fell out. So that's kind of the reverse.
Yeah, it is, but that's my point. I never had an idea of how I would play it and what I would do. My approach is the same. So how would I get the best out of you? I've got to know you, build a relationship with you, understand you, probably understand you better than you. You spoke before you about you might make an excuse. I've got to spot those excuses and when you're not being truthful. And
that my weaknesses.
That was always my approach. So I'd had some real difficult conversations anyway with those players who I thought either weren't pulling the weight, kidding themselves, or even when I was coaching. But it didn't mean they knew I had the back, do you know what I mean? They knew then I'd be the one going out in the afternoon working with them. So that was exactly the same when I took over. I didn't have to change anything because I felt I'd been pushing them anyway and also working as hard as I could to get them in the team and get them to stay in the team. So that was just my approach.
So it sort of feels like a bit of a theme of a sort of wave that you I don't want to say were picked up by, but that you were riding at Barnsley from when you joined coaching the youth team to moving up and up and up, taking charge. And of course the first, what was it, five months or so, did you take charge around February time? And
yeah, I mean
it couldn't have gone much better in the first 5 months with two trips to Wembley and two wins, one in the JPT and one in the playoff final.
Yeah, but you said that right in the wave. I was on the verge of leaving. I'd been just being offered, like I say, you get taken advantage of as well when, so there's some fantastic people still work at Barnsley, but who are Barnsley people, Barnsley fans, and I understand, but and the club are probably aware they take advantage of them people in terms of what they're willing to give, how little they might get paid, and that type of thing, which you put bought, they bring so much to the club. And at the time I was like first team coach and doing in the 21s, no one was in there as many hours as I was, you know what I mean? But I weren't upset about that. What I was upset was I knew that the players who are meant to be with the 21s weren't getting the person they should have had. That's sort of been a theme in my time playing. And when things aren't right, I have a problem with them. And so I was on the verge of going, then ended up taking over. And I was still thinking about going, even though, you know, we're having this success because of, just the opportunity somewhere else.
So it was the fact that you weren't appointed until winning promotion, was that a mixture of... I think everyone said, well, why are they not appointing him when they're on such a good run?
Maybe I got offered the job early on, yeah.
You did, yeah. So it was you that said, actually, hold on.
Yeah, said the reasons, been offered a job elsewhere. Didn't know the plans of the club. Like I said, no one knew the club as well as I did, do you know what I mean? And there were things that I thought, can we be successful here? If this is carried, you know what I mean? If this is like this... Results can just paper over cracks, you know what I mean? You have to understand what you're doing well. You have to understand how you've got there and then how you make it better. And I didn't think we were there, but I'd always said that if we did go up, there's no way I can't do it. No way.
Yeah.
So even though I think I signed the contract at the end of June, I think I'd already told Patrick, you know, when we went up that I would stay. So, yeah, it was... There's no way I couldn't then. It was the experience of it. Like I say, I knew that point as well. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to do. Mm. The different challenges of it, working with players, being the one making the decisions. Really enjoyed it.
You're heading into the Championship season and you've obviously got some concerns under the surface. And the wave doesn't stop there because in January, you're eighth in the Championship as a promoted team. With a budget that must have been right down there at that level. And that's, I think, where although you clearly had some reservations, that's where, for the likes of us covering the leagues, it was like, this couldn't be going any better. It's a young manager, there's a captain from Barnsley, the manager's from Barnsley, the chairman's from Barnsley, they're eighth in the championship with a squad of young players. And that's when it seemed to stop, because the easy thing to look at as a pundit was the sale of key players in January, which really seemed to halt the momentum of the team.
Yeah, sale's a sale. The only way we could have got better and continue to get better would be to buy cheap, develop players, sell them on, reinvest. So that process, understood 100% and enjoyed it. And it started when we went up, like I say, so we got promoted. 9 players of the 18 that got us promoted left.
Yeah.
It was important we kept AD White and Adam Hamill, so that was one thing I was fighting for. We managed to tie them down, so they were part of the 9. And so I knew we had 7, 8, 9 good players.
Yeah.
But that we needed more. So recruitment was key. Didn't want a big squad. I've been trying to get Ryan Kent since February from Liverpool. Eventually got him in at the end of July. He was a big one for us, you know, we wanted to play. And we brought in some good loans again. You know, Adam Armstrong came in on loan. We brought in some real good loans. But that's only a stopgap.
Yeah.
So we needed to reinvest and buy. We should have bought more of our own.
Mm.
One of our strengths, we wanted to recruit under 24, lower down,
yeah,
cheap. But it don't mean they all fit the bill. Mm. And if you do identify someone in that small pool, you've got to go and get them. So yeah, even if it costs you an extra couple hundred grand, an extra grand a week, you have to go and get them. And we signed some real good players. But
I was going to say, the success rate is still higher than the average, isn't it?
Yeah, but you don't know about the ones that weren't successful. Do you get what I mean? With the plenty of...
Well, there are some who are not playing for Barnsley anymore.
Yeah.
Players back in Scotland or...
But that weren't the strength. So the model was good, but the strength of what we had is the people at the club. So some of the people are still there, some all left with me. The environment that we brought players into was perfect for overachieving. Do you know what I mean? There were no little area that a player could hide in terms of not trying to get better.
Mm.
I'm not saying we're cracking the whip all the time, but it was about getting better. It was about improving. There was support there. There was challenge there. Everything was aligned to gear towards our perfect performance, how we want to play. And that was our strength. So that's how we tried to maximise everything, even from the young players and beneath in the 21s. So that was our strength. And that's what sort of lost and went away from thinking it weren't that. It was how we recruit. It weren't.
Mm.
You can recruit good players, or you can have 2 players who you're undecided on, but this one could be as far away as possible from what you need. This one could be perfect because of what you are and what you're about. So that was really our strength, the environment we created for the players.
And then was that what was somehow being undermined or being lost slightly the second half of that first championship season?
Well, no, we lost... It's well documented. We should have negotiated with players earlier. We should have tied them down. We had a great model, which I thought people thought in terms of how we look to identify players who we would buy. That same model was shown. We had some of the top performing players in the championship who were on peanuts. So why didn't we use that same information which we would use to go and spend 400 grand to get this player tied down, 4 grand a week? And we didn't do it. We left it too long, and then there's only one option. It's either we need to sell them or let them go on a free at the end of the summer.
Yeah.
We actually happened both. I think we sold 4 left. I'll include Sam Morsi next. We had him already agreed. 4 left. Another 4 wanted to leave, which was difficult.
Yeah.
And then a lot left on a free in the summer as well.
Mm.
So we got stung both ways. And when you're in that position, you don't get true value. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you haven't got the maximum amount of money to reinvest into your group.
Mm. And suddenly for the first half of the season, everyone's focusing on the football. That dreaded January comes around and all those problems start to rear their heads.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, presumably because of that, what you've just said.
Yeah, no, we still did well, but the problem is, and I look back, I can't remember where we were. I just remember middle of December, we beat Birmingham away, who were flying high.
Mm.
We beat them away 3-0 and we went 6th, 7th, something like that. I can't remember where we went. And around that time, I think probably 4th and 5th just above us were Huddersfield and Reading. And one thing I was really proud of in the likes of the staff, the team, the players, we had a real clear identity. So, you know what I mean? I think you could have put Barnsley in a blue kit, watched us play, and that's Barnsley. That we had a real clear way that we played. So did Reading, so did Huddersfield. And I admired them. I thought, they're going places. The big difference was they both bought a couple of players in January, doing really, really well. We were right there with them. We sold our best players. They both end up in the playoff final. You know, so I actually went to the show, the video, Barnsley, they made a film on Barnsley's promotion to Premier League, and I did an interview afterwards. Oh, it'll never happen again, will it? And I thought, are you kidding me? I need to stop you. You know, we were in December before we sold them players. You know what I mean? It was as if everyone gave up, thought, oh, we're just Barnsley, that's where we are. Do you know what I mean? We were doing well, we had a great chance. And who knows? But it was just one of those things.
Yeah. What do you remember about the trips to Wembley? As someone who wanted to be a manager, then wasn't sure, and then decided they wanted to be, as they basically became one. Yeah. And within 5 months, you've won twice at a place that most managers will never win. I was actually at both of those games, and it was just like the goals scored, the intensity of the play, the intensity of the support, and just I just remember like Conor Hourihan and everyone running around afterwards. It was just pure joy.
It was good, and that's why I'm gonna believe you try and win every game. So anyone had to, anyone in the Checker Trade Trophy, I'll try and win it. So that sort of kept our season alive. I remember when in November, December, we were bottom of the league, but still doing all right in that. And like you can be losing, I think, well, I stayed in a row in the league, but then winning the cup, you know, just gives you that little bit more. And knocked out of the FA Cup away at Altrincham, real low point. I remember that, you know, being on the staff and seeing John Owen, the manager, really low, and you think, come on, you know, I remember that being a real low point, but we're still. I can't remember who we beat them, but we had the semi-final of the cup to come up, and it was like it kept the season alive, really. Then results picked up in the league, and we qualified against Fleetwood in the semi-final, and Jono left the next day, so the job had already been done to get to that final. So regardless of what we'd done and won in the league, so between me taking over, we'd done well in the league, picked up results, performing better, playing really well. But when it came to that first final, I felt a bit strange, a bit of an imposter, because, you know, Jono had won the rounds in the league, in the cup. So that was strange. But we win there, and it helped us prepare. The momentum stayed in the league, you know, his form was fantastic, and we got to the point where I knew if we were physically right, we'd beat whoever we were playing against. It got to that point, the lads were just in it.
Including really champions Wigan on final day, a game you had to win. Were they hungover?
We were good. We were good, but I remember going mad at half time. We were 2-1 up, but we'd got a real clear way of playing then. Really aggressive, lots of intensity to how we play. Front men were really important. They had to start us off, be on the front foot, and we created lots of chances by winning the ball back up high up the pitch. And for some reason, we didn't do it. Playing Wigan, we were letting them play out from the back, and we never showed anyone that much respect. Never. And it was rammed. They won the league. We were trying to get the playoffs. And the atmosphere was rocking. It was party time. You couldn't get a message on. And I remember trying everything to get a message on. And eventually got it. And then we started pressing. We scored two goals at the end of the first half with us, you know, not just going and getting on top of them, dominating. And I remember going mad at half time. Who's made the call not to press? You know what I mean? We decide how we play. Do you know what I mean? And then we got and delivered. And I remember being really mad, really angry, just because of that. Why are we coming away from that? Who's made this call here now? And then on the front foot again, second half, score another two and dominate. But that is the deal. You speak, Wigan's probably achieved their goal. We weren't. We were chasing. So a big part of our game, our intensity, especially when you're chasing something.
You knew you'd almost have a sort of upper hand in terms of just mentality and desire.
Yeah.
But it was just human nature.
Also it was a big part of how we played. We took risks in possession. We took risks out of possession. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? No fear. So why all of a sudden play with a bit of fear just because of the occasion? Mm-hmm. And it was really important. And it was good for us to learn from that and take it forward. So that's how we approached in the playoffs.
Was that style that you played with Barnsley, was that something that you, when you thought of how you would manage a team were you to ever get a job beforehand. Is that, was that you sort of demanding that, or was that more, you know, there are some clubs that almost come with a style of play, come with an expectation of how they're going to play, whether it's direct like Millwall or possession based like other teams.
A bit of everything. So when I was coaching and doing the badges, one of the studies I did was on Borussia Dortmund. They were a team I chose, and another one was Atletico Madrid, a team I liked, and the simple reason, they were overachieving. So I was looking at me, right, the players I'm ever going to work with, what's going to be? You know, we're not going to be Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich and have the most money, the best players. You might be lucky enough one day to be doing that. But so why are Dortmund winning two Bundesliga titles? Why are they doing the league and cup double? Why Atletico Madrid winning the league and getting the Champions League finals? Because they shouldn't be above their opposition. So he's looking for real common threads, if you like, in their teams, their performances, how they play, and there were some real similarities between the two.
So you took a 4-4-2 from Atletico and the press from Dortmund.
Yeah, but how we defended it. Yeah, it's similar. No. So play and trying to simplify it somewhat, attacking a way that...
We got very intellectual listeners.
Yeah, well, attacking a way that promotes how you want to defend. So don't be bothered about taking risks and playing forward and getting bodies up the pitch and playing forward passes, because when you lose it, you've got bodies around the ball to win the ball back. And also defending in a way that promotes how you want to attack. So Atletico Madrid defending the edge of their box, or their defensive third, I think are fantastic. But there was a couple of little positions which Dortmund take up, because they were a big counter-attacking team, which for me worked better than Atletico. And so wherever we were on the pitch, we defended the same. And a first pass should, if we had players in good positions, be able to set up a counter dependent on the opposition setup. So yeah, some real common threads, and link that then to where I'm from, me and knowing the town. But there's not many fans in football that don't like high intensity football. There's not many. You know, we'd gone through a stage earlier on in that season where it was all possession, and it looked good at times. But if you're conceding 20 shots at your goal every game, you're not going to be doing well, and there's a slowness to you. And it's something I've always looked at then, since the teams who are predominantly the top of leagues, no matter what level, but compare them to other teams in their leagues, and they'll be playing at higher intensity generally. Not everyone, because some teams, you mentioned direct or set plays, or can be really effective in that, but generally intensity of your performance is something that we're getting near the top.
And moving up to the Championship, it seemed like you didn't make too many changes or adaptations to that game, and yet moved up to the league above with stronger squads and better opposition, took them on in the same sort of way and had great success with that.
Yeah, same sort of way, because there's a key tactical thing in how we defend. It's funny, you say so we played Ipswich away first game of the season and lost 4-2.
4-2, yeah.
And got people saying nice things about us, how we played, how we passed the ball. I'm like, no chance. The three of the goals we conceded were fundamental, that we can't accept that. And I remember saying the player will never be a pretty team and not win games. But they knew what I was talking about, because certain players, there's fundamental certain things that we wouldn't accept in the team. It sounds like the really bad things, they're not, but they're just what we stood for. And then the next game, league game at home, we beat Derby 2-0, and we were the exact opposite. We were really, really strong, really organised, really efficient with the ball, but we always pressed in League One. League Two, in the Championship, when they were dropping the centre backs out, and then they had Will Hughes and Tom Huddleston going deeper to get on the ball, a lot to ask on our centre forwards to trigger. And if we did go full all the time, there was big spaces then for the wingers coming in and the number 10. We'd already spoke about this as staff and I wanted to do it, but we'd not done much work on it, simply because we'd been really effective one way, where we'd always press with a nine and have a midfielder dealing with one deep midfielder. We didn't want to release a second midfielder to go on that. So we worked a lot more then on maybe creating our own triggers to press by making their first pass predictable, whether it be to the fullback, whether it be a square pass, whether it be a negative pass. So that was one thing that we added. And the players took on board, because when you can see things working up, you buy into it more. So that was one, the only tactical change out of possession. And it was
because we only had to really change one thing and add one thing, we were still well drilled and kept it really simple as we could.
The players that you coached at Barnsley, whether it was in that League One season and some of them who stayed, some of them who were added in the summer that you moved up to the Championship, I mean, to my eyes anyway, the core of that squad are now almost to a man established Championship players. In the case of Mawson, obviously, who played down in League One, a Premier League player and an England player. So that must be a source of great joy and pride to watch these guys do so well. And also speaks to what you said earlier about what an unbelievable job yourself, the recruitment team, did to put together that squad who, at the time, were young players who hadn't necessarily proved themselves, and to be able to get a load of guys who are now challenging for promotion to the Premier League. And you know, I think of Hourihan, who signed from Plymouth. Just listening to you talk about the system there, I mean, and I'm just thinking about his role at Villa now, which has changed again under Smith, as it was under Bruce. I mean, the amount of different roles he's played in the last few years.
Yeah, and this is what, if you want to maximise everything, that's why you can't just recruit off stats. There's got to be a filter, but you have to be really clear on what is the role they're going to come and perform in your team. Now, yeah, if the stats marry up perfect for that particular role, he's going to play, great. But you need to really be visual, watch him, everything about him. So can he perform the role? Because you have to be clear on your roles to be make your recruitment as simple as possible, so you're not wasting money, you're not wasting targets. And that's what you can't afford to come away from. So Connor came as an attacking midfielder, really bought off goals and assists. But we were bottom of the league for a long, long time until he added lots of other elements to his game, which took him to another level. So out of possession, understanding his role, we've not got the ball, defending as a two when we're just playing a two to get two forwards on the pitch.
Sometimes the more defensive of the two.
So there's two roles. So the easier tactical element. So Dean loves his six to be getting on the ball and dictating.
He certainly does.
So a big strength from Connor, if Connor was obsessed with getting goals and assists and playing beyond their midfield, you'd lose a big strength of his, which was receiving the ball, playing forward passes. So it was getting him to see that you can be having as much influence on the game without having shots at goal. That might be someone else's role today. And Connor, for example, understood that. He liked to get, we used to collect our own performance stats, and he liked to see his in and out of possession and have discussions about, well, why is his score not so high today? Well, because a big part of our game today was how effective we were without the ball. We played on the counter-attack. Then we might play at home against someone and draw or lose 2-0, and his scores in possession could be through the roof. Well, yeah, because you've been constantly on the ball trying to break a team down. He likes to understand things like that. So it's interesting for me seeing him now play as a six, because he can be in a possession team, a manager, if you like, a coach who wants to build, then he's someone who will look to get on the ball in that position and play forwards.
You've been watching a lot of games this season. Which of the former players from Barnsley have you enjoyed seeing, you know, flourishing in the Championship? Who have you seen, a bit like Connor, taking another step up and improving even more?
Yeah, we mentioned Connor. There's been some, obviously, in and out. Obviously, Josh Gowan was always a big player for us at Barnsley, because he could be unnoticed, you know, with his work. And again, reflecting back to statistical things, a lot of his good work was decision making when we didn't have the ball, which how do you represent that?
They don't have tracking data for everyone yet, do they?
So he really understood his role in our team wherever we played him. Sometimes we played him tucked in on the right, sometimes we played him as a three, as a ten, as a deeper player, and he really, really understood his role. So you notice players like Mo when they're gone and you're trying to teach someone else. So he was a big one. It's a good city, and he's been in and out a little bit of QPR this year. But Mark Roberts been similar at Birmingham. Sort of been out of the team when they went on that real good run. And he's got to fight and fight to get back in the side. Sam Winner's had a bad injury.
Angus McDonald's not always had it easy either at Hull, has he?
Angus, definitely. Marley was got a good move to Norwich and failed to nail down. The teams have gone now with a manager that he knows at Bristol. The long players have been interesting. So Josh Brown was someone I'd have loved to have kept, but he'd already committed to Bristol City, and we couldn't really afford to compete. But you could see him, he blossomed, you know, in that short time we worked with him, and went on and sort of struggled a little bit when he first went in and out the side. So I tried to get him again, you know, someone who I knew would fit for us, and then he's gone on to be the player that we all know he could be.
Supposedly it was reported that you were quite keen on Andy Yeardom, on signing him at Leeds.
It's been one of the
signings of the season.
We had a spell in the championship, so we had Andy Yeardom, Angus McDonald, Mark Roberts, James Bree as a back four. I first started working with James, a 12-year-old in the academy, and then the other three all played together for England C, non-league. You know, and we've been and recruited them, worked with them, and got them in a position where, you know, keeping clean sheets and winning lots of games in the championship and getting people. So every one of them had a bid for them that we turned down when we were at Barnsley, all gone now. But every one of them were attracting attention of other people. So there are players out there, but I keep saying the same. The skill is getting the ones who, you know, can fit what you're going to ask them to do.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because we've just been through the list of players from that squad, and a lot of them are struggling to find the same sort of key role in the team that they've joined, and the same sort of success in the teams that they've joined. So it's almost like, quite obviously, when a team does well, when a team, dare I say, overachieves, then everyone swoops in. You've seen it even at the top level with Spurs and Real Madrid buying all their players.
And this is why it's not always about, when you're discussing recruitment with an owner, with heads of recruitment, with scouts, it's not always about trying to go and get the best player. It's about the one who fits into it. Because at the end of the day, all those players were bottom of the league in League One in the same season they got promoted, and no one wanted them. They go to Wembley at the end of the season, win two finals, set off on fire in the championship, and everybody wants them. And that's not me, I'll be honest, that's not me making them better players. I think the skill is in identifying a way of playing which is effective, but then does it play the player's strengths and hide the weaknesses? Because then all of a sudden everyone could come and think, what a player. You're maximising the value in the players again, you're getting maximum fees if they come. You're not really improve the player that much, you just maybe made them better at performing that role in the team. So there's lots of ways. Whilst you are trying to improve individuals, the bigger picture for me is winning the games and working with players to play the strengths side to weaknesses.
Going from Barnsley to Leeds in February of this year, was it?
Yeah.
We talked about riding a very good wave in the first year or maybe 18 months of your time at Barnsley, and how there was some maybe more going on that from the outside it was hard to see. That few weeks must have been, just in terms of your managerial experiences, a pretty lively few weeks. What
leading up to moving or after
It's one of those ones where when you read about the move, it is Paul Heckingbottom signs a new contract at Barnsley, moves to Leeds a short time afterwards. Yeah. And I think for understandable reasons, there are Barnsley fans and other fans who just can't quite wrap their head around why it happened, like why that was a part of it.
I'll tell everything from the start and that. So Patrick actually came to me in March and said about, look, you need a new contract. So this is March after our first season in the Championship. You need a new contract and a bonus for staying up. Yeah, no problem. not a problem. Come June, we'd still not discussed it, you know, never been brought to me, anything like that. Fine, not an issue. We were always, me and it's going to sound like I'm speaking bad about Pochettino, I'm not. He's, do you know what I mean? He was really challenging for me, made me a lot better, utmost respect for him, do you know what I mean? Really, in lots of ways. So you can't, we had a relationship where we argued a hell of a lot, but you can't fail not to understand someone and get to know someone really close if you're that some intense sometimes. And the other thing which why I think fans as well have to, and players and managers have to respect the owners, would you be willing to put your own money, your own family money, personal money into a football club and lose it? So as much as, you know, people know I'm a Barnsley fan, I've never put my money into the club like someone else has. So that's really important to understand. But we have differences on recruitment, on lots of things, you know, mistakes that I didn't feel we'd learn from, and so that was ongoing. And then it came to the point where he says, we're going to sell the club, blah, blah, blah. Remember that contract? I said, well, I'm not signing in one even if you bring it to me, because I want to know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we were okay with that. So that was ongoing. Then when we got to know the new owners, we knew it was going through, discussions started again about the contract. And I could have got, there's opportunities for me to leave as well at these points, and I was on with the club, and the club knew, and I'm not interested. So that was the case. And then when the new owners were in, going to be in, new contract was easy to agree, I'd said, you know, they'd known I'd not shown any interest in leaving or going elsewhere. So that was all, not a problem, all agreed, done. You know, staying, signed, but Patrick's health had deteriorated really badly then, and, you know, I was asked, would we mind, you know, delaying the announcement of the contract and everything, and I had no problem with that. At the end of the day, it was done, so I was getting paid, or I was getting back date payment from when it was agreed, which was before, well before, so no problem. And then we knew Patrick was sadly going to pass away, and club rightly wanted to keep some good news for further down the line and pay our respects, so that was not a problem. So all it was the timing of when the club chose to release it. Just so happened a couple of days later, Leeds came in for me. There was other issues that had gone off then. The club knew I would be going at that point, because I'd told the CEO that, do you know what I mean, next time it's time for me to go. And I didn't know what was happening. And, you know, it was just, I knew rightly then that it was time for me to leave, time for me to go elsewhere.
Is that after strategy discussions with the new owners,
really,
with the new
board? I
didn't know
what strategy was. I didn't really know. And, you know, we'd argued, and we were always arguing. It felt like it was, oh, yeah, sorry, Paul, we'll not do that again. And it was always two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back. But I thought, come on, sometimes we don't make the same mistakes. Come on, you do feel an attachment to the club. You feel responsible for fans, players, the staff who's there. So I know I probably took a lot of that in my decision making. Do you know what I mean? But it came to a point where I was like, what am I, value am I adding in this? You couldn't show me any more lack of respect, really, than just arranging medicals and signings without me even knowing. Do you know what I mean? So it just got to that stage where, regardless, it was just time for me to leave. And then I think it was in the next couple of weeks, Leeds came in, and that was it, done.
When the call came from Leeds, was that a surprise or not really?
Surprise, because I think, I'm trying to think the days. I think Thomas left on the Sunday. I think I was in place by the Tuesday. I remember it being a Monday morning, me hearing about it and trying to get someone in touch with someone at Barnsley Football Club, because I knew that Leeds had made contact, and I couldn't get in touch with anyone. So when I knew before training, so we took training as normal, and then I remember just hanging about, oh well, trying to get in touch with someone to find out what was happening. You know, did I have permission to speak, was it all agreed, blah blah blah. So it was strange, but and looking at it now, I'd made my mind up I was going regardless. Do you know what I mean? Who it was, I was going.
Do you think they were alright with that?
Who?
The new owners, the people that you'd had disagreements with? Or
I don't really have disagreements. It was the CEO, Mark. So I've had three totally different ownerships now as well, which has been interesting for me. So I had a local man, similar upbringing to myself, family run club, passionate about it, vocal in his intentions and not scared to pull you up on things, and we, you know what I mean, it's a really one way. To then a consortium of owners that spread all around the world, and you're trying to get in touch with people, phone call around the world, different time zones, and then it might be an email if you want everyone involved, and so that was different. And then Andreas at Leeds, an Italian businessman who's new into the management, the ownership of a club, totally different again. So that's all been interesting. But my contact at the club at that point was the CEO at Barnsley. So, yeah, so he knew my feelings all the time. We're daily speaking about it. And it was important that I think I was always honest about what was happening and what I felt. So,
did the disappointment, the reaction from the Barnsley fans and the...
Not the fans, because the fans reacted to what the club were telling them.
Did that affect the first week or 2 weeks of Leeds manager, were you able to shut that out? Because obviously you're joining mid-season, which is not easy in itself.
You don't think of it. And like I say, it could have been... So it was Griffin being local, knowing Leeds, growing up, rivaling Leeds. You know what I mean? I knew the size of the club and what it was. But like I say, it could have been anywhere. That's where I was at that point. But that was difficult then, looking back. That was naive on my part in terms of then the questions I need to ask at Leeds, the position. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I'd have said here now, they could have told me anything, absolute horror story. I was that committed to leaving that I'd have gone regardless. And it's the wrong frame of mind to be in. But that's where I got to.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, from an outsider looking at Leeds and seeing all the stats about the churn of managers, albeit under different owners. The fact that I think Gary Monk's the only man who's completed a full season in the last God knows how many years. I was going to ask, when you get contacted by Leeds, are there some worries about that? Are there some questions about whether you're actually going to get the support that, you know, they promise all new managers? But it sounds like that wasn't really relevant because of where your head was at.
When I look back now, that's one of the things I've taken from all the things in the bits I've been doing for myself afterwards. Being really, really clear before you go in and having as strong a relationship as possible with the owner. And I don't think I weren't misled in any way, but I certainly didn't know the landscape of the club. And
it was quite a different landscape, wasn't it? I know you've said about decision making.
Yeah,
like you had to do a lot at Barnsley and then at Leeds there were more people there.
That was the attraction. I wanted to go in. So how it was sold. So my remit going in, look, Paul, with the owners put a lot of his own money in, and the only way now we can increase the budget and get to near the top of the league in terms of competing financial-wise is, you know, selling player, developing his own, buying his own, developing, selling, profit.
This is at Leeds?
At Leeds, yeah.
Essentially the Barnsley model.
Yeah, well, a lot were going down that route.
Yeah.
We've got a problem with discipline at the minute. There were four players suspended when I went in. We've got no connection with the academy, no players coming through. And we want a more aggressive style of play in terms of when we've not got the ball and something the fans can identify with. And then it was like, there you go, this is what you've been doing. So it was fine. And the model was as a head coach. So we had a financial director, director of football, owner. This is where you fit in. Right, well, this is what I do. This is what it looks like. This is what you're going to have to do. And everything was sort of really, really simple. But looking back now, I think that was more the financial director, director of football's ideas that they got Andreas to buy along with. Do you know what I mean?
And right.
It was...
They've encouraged that structure to be put in place, which is a modern structure that seems to make sense.
Yeah, and it was just a change of tack then.
Which, but you have to get everyone to buy into it.
Everyone's got to buy into it and believe in it and understand that the process to get there and the difficult decisions that you have to do. So, it was interesting. it was good. I was happy with the decision I made, whether we could get them across the line. So look at the club now and things that's happened. And the only way... And you have to accept thinking football. The only way I'd have still been there was winning more games, which I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at what we were doing as well behind and what we identified, and in terms of the remit, we were doing it. The big one is identifying players who, you know, you want to take forward. There's a good group of players there who had some talent, but there's also a big group behind that and into the 23s. Which we're never going to play.
Mm.
But when you've got all those players about and in the building and hanging up, it just detracts from everything you're trying to achieve.
Mm.
The hunger, the drive, everything that I've been about and the team's been about. That's one way to straight away make that better. Move them on, get rid of them.
Mm.
Difficult when you're coming straight after a window, you know all these things are going to have to be done in the summer. The other thing they were doing as well was obviously blocking then the progression of the young boys. We gave five league debuts.
Yeah.
Some of them were not, we wouldn't have, we just, with the injury suspensions we had to put them in. But others were better than what were there. I look at Bailey, Peacock, Farrell's deserved to be in. Maybe not that opportunity, but we had to do something. We weren't happy with the goalkeeper in front of him. So Similar with Tom Pearce, you know, player who I'd seen in the 21s a couple of years previous. Athletically really good, still got lots of areas to improve, but deserved his chance. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that. Discipline, yeah, it's easy to sort out, and because the players were good lads and really bought into it.
It's quite an eclectic mix in that squad, wasn't there? I mean, they had done a lot of recruitment in Europe, like a lot of other teams in the previous years.
So that's the other thing, the recruitment needed to be focused on players who were capable of playing in the Championship, not potentially capable, bringing in less players but with proven that can play in England, play in the Championship. Don't have to be British players, but with evidence of playing in there. And then another one is evidence of a real physical robustness. The squad needed conditioning and really getting strong. You can carry a smaller squad then if you're physically strong enough, got enough cover, and you recruit for the key areas of the pitch, and it's fine. And I look at that, and that's what they've done. That's what they've done.
When I think of the Barnsley side and how that was put together, it was, as you've mentioned, generally young British players from lower leagues. That Leeds squad had this weird mix where you've got Football League veterans or guys who, you know, English guys who played their career there, and then a lot of these younger European lads. And that was presumably your first experience of having loads of different languages in the dressing room and different cultures.
And in the staff and in the board and the decision makers, yeah, definitely. But one thing that is always the same is the football. The conflict came in terms of, right, how I saw the game and how I wanted the game to be played. Because for me, the tactics, your ultimate performance has to dictate, or the tail's wagging the dog. Do you know what I mean? If we want to get to this style of play, this is what we want our team to look like. Every other decision then comes off the back of that. How you recruit, the environment you try and create, and the behaviours you want your players to demonstrate, your staff to demonstrate, every interaction, every decision then is born off that sort of model of performance, if you like. So there was a lot of work needed doing before we could get to that. As I said, players out, less players in, but of a different type. Creating an environment with staff as well, change over a staff where you need to be hungry and driven, and just to a lot less numbers of players, you're automatically creating natural opportunity for players to come in who you can judge, keep that hunger, keep the drive. So that's where the conflict came in terms of my decision making. I knew we were a long way away from being able to make that big shift. But sometimes it's more important getting players out than it is getting them in.
Yeah, you've said the principles that you hold and speaking your mind meant that maybe your departure was quicker than it could have been if you'd just sort of towed the party line and you could have maybe stuck around for a bit longer.
Well, one thing I wanted to be made sure happy with, I felt, so just said to you, I felt I knew what needed to happen, do you know what I mean? And I felt within the club there was an acceptance that needed to happen. It was just making it happen. And I'm really, I can be happy with myself that I was truthful and tried to make it happen, do you know what I mean? Because the one thing I could have never done is sit tight and then speaking to you in 4 months time being sacked having done nothing. Because I don't know, you've got to try and do it, you've got to try and fight for everything and make things better and do things right, and then do you know what, if it don't work out, you've done everything that you can and you can be happy with yourself.
When you left the club, it was said that the objective was to bring in a head coach with more experience. I mean, you'd been there for 4 months and clearly 4 or 5 months before they were looking for something else. That must have been a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I knew I was going, do you know what I mean? I knew what was happening. And I knew it would only be if they could bring in a player with a reputation, because the shift changed. So the objectives I was setting, you came in, or the idea of how we were going to go forward changed, and it's every right. I don't run the club, I don't own the club, do you know what I mean? But it'd be nice to be given opportunity to do it in a different way, definitely. But that wasn't my decision. And I've spoke to people at Leeds since, and Andreas, and I get, I'll not say what we spoke about, but listen, it's his club, he run it exactly how he wants. No problems with that. And good luck to him, and I mean that. Like, I watch him play now, and I look at the things I could sit back and, well, I've actually done what I was speaking about. Yeah, so yeah, I can be. There's no guarantee if I'd still be there that we'd be up there.
Mm.
But likewise, no guarantee if manager would have come in when I came in.
Yeah,
would be up there. They'd have faced the same issues as me. They just might have gone about it in a different way. I don't know. So,
as someone that was studying Dortmund around the time that they were so good, whatever that was, 5 odd years ago, I'm sort of thinking aloud here that that was a similar time that Bielsa's Athletic Bilbao were ripping Man United to shreds. So that
I actually spoke to director of football at Leeds about Bilbao and
really
and the way they played, and I probably put the idea in his head. Let's go get Marcelo.
What have you made about how he's, because we were told that he could only play one way and he just was so stubborn about it, and I'm not sure it's necessarily been the case. I've been quite impressed with how he's sort of adapted his style to English football, because we've seen managers, I think, before who haven't done that and maybe been a bit surprised.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you, because I don't know, never spoke to him. I couldn't tell you what he's had to adapt, or maybe concessions he's made, or things he's spotted where he thinks he can get a tactical advantage. I don't know. There's one thing to do see, which has seen a few South Americans as well, is how they defend without the ball, which has been a little bit different, where it's getting described as really man-to-man in lots of areas. And it is specific, so more or less every game, if wingers are coming in off the line and going deep for the ball, he has the full-backs going all the way in with him and his wingers tracking all the way back with the opposition's full-backs. Take it to Sheffield United the other day, he's gone a step further and had virtually everyone match him up his shape, and had virtually everyone bar his middle centre back going man for man. And I think that's a big compliment to Chris Wilder and Sheffield United, but it's shown, Leeds thinking about it, Marcel's come up with what he considers the answer and they win the game. But it was really interesting to watch, because I've heard a lot of people speak about Chris and Sheffield United and the brand of football and how they played, and and people ask, how would you deal with that then? What would you do with that? How would you? And that's one way, which I've not seen before in terms of the people in the Championship set up against them. So that was an interesting game to watch. I really enjoyed that game watching. And then flipping it, if it's so man for man here, why aren't Sheffield United? And that's the bit I'm missing.
You
can watch a game and have all the answers.
Yeah.
If it's not working after 10 minutes, I'm not then making the next decision.
Yeah.
And that's the bit where I feel like I'm falling behind and not getting better, because I want to be back in that hot seat, if you like, and thinking about it.
I think Bielsa said in the press that he thought that Wilder has done some things that he hadn't been able to do, tactical things to implement that Bielsa hasn't achieved. So I thought that was really nice. That was an excellent game. Is it difficult when just talking about reacting to the opposition in the Championship, and especially with now a lot of different styles of play, which probably 10 years ago we didn't see that much sort of diversity in terms of systems. You mentioned there, Bielsa doing that to try and counteract Chris Wilder's Sheffield United and their style of play. Is it quite difficult when there are so many games to have time to properly analyse the opposition and set up a game plan, when often you're playing two games
Saturday,
in a week?
Saturday, yeah.
And if you can't, do you just go, we just have to play our game?
Well, this is the point. So I'm very much play our game. This is how we play. But you can be really clear in how you play your game against every different opposition. Does that make sense? You may have a tactical change of shape. But there's also key tactical elements within your performance which are really important when you're playing Sheffield United, for example. Like we would play 4-3-3 against Sheffield United as opposed to a 4-4-2. But the principles of how we played would still be the same. That would be the tactical change. Wolves came and did something different.
Yeah.
And we played 4-3-3 against that because it was a three at the back. But a key element then was us being more dominant of the ball against Wolves and using our six to get on the ball, because they only had two in the middle and we felt we could overload a player. So we'd still play that 4-3-3 in the same way, but a key part of how we play would probably be more important based on how the opposition play. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I'm wondering how, it definitely makes sense that switch against a Wolves or a Sheffield United. I guess in terms of where bodies are on the pitch or positioning, you've then got the one striker and they've got the three defenders. So what's the, how are you going to hurt them then?
We struggle. So we got promoted with Barnsley and then recruited that summer and then set off in the Championship. we generally played with two forwards. So out of possession, we were a 4-4-2. But in possession, we were lots of different things. But out of possession,
two sort of nines as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, two nines. But when we had the ball, there was always one of them as a 10 and wingers coming off the line. Sometimes a wide player would be a centre midfielder. So so in possession, we were lots of things. But out of possession, we defended as a 4-4-2. And we were really comfortable when we didn't have the ball. So when I speak about perfect performance, we break down how we play into seven phases. So transition, winning the ball, can we counter? If we can't counter, how do we create? When we lose the ball, so that defensive transition, first thought is a regain. If we can't, how do we control the opposition when we don't have the ball? And then all restarts. So we're always in one of those phases. We were comfortable in every phase in that. The players we lost, and then as manner of recruitment, meant the balance of the squad, so the tactical balance of the squad, physical balance of the squad, technical balance of the squad, we became less competent without the ball. So we only had one striker in Tom Bradshaw. Mama took a little while to settle in, so we changed shape for that reason, but we only had one. We always want strikers on the bench, but we had to control the game more with the ball a lot, use our six. So we were comfortable going away and having 40% possession, but we'd still back ourselves to win 2-0 away, for example. Couldn't do that anymore, so we had to focus on something different, and really start playing more possession, how we handle the ball and can control the game with the ball whilst trying to get better without the ball, because otherwise we'd become a totally different team. So that was the key thing with us tactically, and the big shifts we felt naturally, but then it was adapting that shape to the opposition. So we'll go back to Wolves 5 at the back or Sheffield United. We wanted to be aggressive, so we're happy at times one striker against three defenders, but we're happy at times if our full backs accept their wing backs, and then we've got 3v3 as soon as we win the ball. So that's not a problem. The problem with Wolves and how they played, because they only played two in the middle still, their wingers came in off the line. So if the wing backs went really high, then they could have five players, if you like, against our four, which was a problem. So we worked really hard without the ball against Wolves, using our six. We'd always tell us six is defensive position, ideally, is between the ball and our goal. Generally, it's a defensive position, you can adjust it. With Wolves' wingers coming in off the line, so we played it in two games and we had a different six. We had Joe Williams away and we had Gary Gardner at home. And a lot of the work then without the ball, so play the same way with the ball, but defensively against Wolves, it's different to defensively against Sheffield United against that shape. So our six, as most of his running would be horizontal, would be sideways when we've not got the ball. So he's coming in and taking, could be Costa coming in off the line, has to take him, because we might have to accept the wing back, right back might have to accept their left wing back. Centre back still dealing with a nine, midfield two are still in there, that's great, but then they play back across the opposite centre back. His legs now have got to get him across to, who could it be on the other side? Diego Jota coming in. Jota coming in off the line off the other side. And that was like a key tactical element, if you like, against them, just because of how they played. We were still the same team, trying to do the same things, but that was a really important tactical element against Wolves. It would have been less so against Sheffield United, because they'd have had three men in there anyway, and it was more man for man in the middle, so... Yeah, and the less moving parts, if you like, the more likely you are to get right. So back in between those, like three days between a game type.
Yeah, must be really tough. I just liked how Chelsea did it and the Premier League couldn't handle it, that system. And then Wolves did it the next year and the Championship was like, what is going on? We don't know what to do. Then lots of teams sort of tried to recreate it, both in the Premier League and in the Championship.
Wolves in possession caused lots of teams so many problems, but I said to Nuno, I still believe that their biggest strength, they were the best team without the ball that season, they were the best team on the counter-attack, and they were arguably the best team at set plays.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But everyone spoke about with the ball, but for me, that the standouts were in the other areas. So are we played two of our best games against Wolves. Only scored one goal. Did we score? Yeah, only scored one goal. And created a handful of chances in two games, that was it. Do you know what I mean? And we were at our best both games, I feel. It was tough.
Set plays are an interesting one. At Leeds, you had a set piece coach. Is that right?
Yeah.
You've obviously turned up and he's already there doing his work. What, like, that must have been a bit different, a bit new?
Yeah, new, but I was sort of aware of his work, G, from previous clubs and obviously playing Leeds, and the value I could see, it's different. So you're setting up against one of his teams, and we had a way we liked to defend and how we played, but it made you think, and we had to adapt again because there were different things going off. So I could see the value in it. But then going to Leeds, and then you're in charge, a little bit different, because there's a, he was very much, you could speak to you, very much more focused on in possession, set plays, and but he'd given a lot of responsibility with out of possession as well, and this and the other, and we were conceding too many, do you know what I mean? I wanted a bit more clarity, so it took a lot of the responsibility away from him. But it's something I'd look at again, definitely. But I've spoke to a couple of people afterwards, managers, who've asked me about it, and one thing that was different Leeds was, I think it was a club appointment rather than the previous manager's appointment, and you don't know what remit has been given, and because, like I say, everyone's job is to get as close to that perfect performance. If you're bringing players in who don't fit that, if you're bringing staff members in who don't fit that, because there's no right or wrong way to play the game. Do you know what I mean? It's about getting, this is us, this is our identity, this is how we play, and then getting everyone to best deliver that, players and staff. So it's what I've said to the manager before, from my experience, it's different. If you're bringing the person in, you're bringing the person in who suits you and how you work, and to deliver the right information in the right way and getting you close to where you want to be. And that's something you have to be really clear on, because another thing, speak about things I've learned from time in the game, I probably took for granted as well, my 4 years' work at Barnsley on set plays, for and against, and how much the players learn and how much then they take on responsibility, how best to get that delivered in 4 weeks at my next club.
Yeah,
you take it for granted.
What's next, Paul? It's taken us a long time to get on this. I thought we were going to start with this, but looking to get back into the same role as you had at Barnsley and Leeds?
Yeah, head coach, definitely. I enjoy it, love it. Where it is, we'll have to wait and see. I've had plenty of phone calls about it. And
yeah, I mean, your name is always in those links, always in the betting markets. I mean, it was even when you were at Barnsley, but since you've been unemployed.
Timing, like the beginning, choice to be out of it, and because I think long term it will make me better, do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Touched on a couple of things, obviously, but it has been good in that respect. The bit what I struggle with is not working and not making them decisions. It's the first time I've not been flat out, so that's been interesting, and planning again for the next time it happens, because it'll happen again.
Have you had some conversations, interviews, applications?
Yeah, all of the above. Where I go, though, we'll have to see whether it's this country, another country. We'll have to wait and see.
When you're in the position you're in, this is just one of those sort of questions that now I'm in the position to ask someone, I have to ask, because I'm just interested as a football fan. How does it work when there is a vacancy and you are interested in it and you want to apply? Because sometimes you see clubs tweet after a manager leaves, you know, there is a vacancy, please send your applications to the club secretary or something. Yeah. Is that how it, or is it through agents, or how does it work?
I'd use my agent to do that, definitely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, conversation.
So you wouldn't email your CV to secretary@eflclub.co.uk?
No. But there's other things. Well, out of respect, there might be a phone. I'm out of work, so it doesn't mean I could phone someone up and support and phone an owner up and.
Mm.
I could do that if I wanted. It's not, so there's no right or wrong way, not at all. So yeah, it'd be interesting, like I said, to see where it is, whether I'll get close to going in somewhere, where I do go in, what I'm, if I stick to, like I said, what I think's really important before you do go in.
That's the sort of structure that you'd like to have in place.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it interesting that there are lots of essentially older, more experienced managers who were used to being managers in the old school sense of the word, who would probably complain about some of the new structures that have been put in place that have changed the role over the last decade or so. Whereas since you've come into management, you've been a head coach twice in that sort of more modern, in inverted commas, sort of system. So yeah, is that something that you...
But you couldn't get two more different. So here you go. So at Barnes, my role's head coach at both. We had a spell at Barnes where we've got no head of recruitment, no CEO. You're doing everything.
So you should have just been called the manager then.
You know, you're doing literally everything.
Yeah.
And then you go to Leeds, head coach, you've got financial director, director of football. It seems totally different again. But it's not the titles, it's what the roles are. So if I ask you what a director of football does, can you tell me?
The business of the football side of the football club.
Which is?
Recruitment, wages and salaries and contracts, staffing.
Yeah, which might be different at all clubs. So where is it documented? What are the actual roles? Where's the crossover between other positions? Too vague. Like, everyone's got a different model, but what basically it comes out, whose role's responsibility for what? Otherwise, there's grey areas, there's people not performing properly. And that's key. That's key, everyone being on the same page, knowing what is the end goal, where we're trying to get to, and what's his plan to get there. And if it fits, you know what I mean? If you fit and you're the right person for them, it should be easy.
Mm.
You know, they should seem like the right people for you as well.
And you've been doing a bit of charity work?
Yeah, so it's something that... So two big things that I want up and running again next time, work all the time. I know, so I were always studying while I was coaching and working. It's only the last year I've not been, and I chose not to because you know, it's hard work. You're back at uni. I did a degree while I was coaching in the other roles, then as head coach, I was doing a master's, and if I couldn't wait to finish it and right focus now on the job, but it don't really suit me. I want to have other things going off. I need to be have other interests. It's all right, people saying get a hobby, so you go on the golf course and still think about work and the game and take your phone calls and
So I read this, you've been trying to get your handicap down, haven't we all, but you've been taking phone calls on the golf course. You must be a nightmare to play with.
Yeah, well, it's funny, first time I played golf with my brother and my dad after when I weren't in work, I came here, I said, are we having a beer yet? No, I said, oh, I enjoyed that. My brother went, yeah, you will do, because you weren't on your phone all the way around. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just how it is. It's different. But I want that different experience. I never want to be in that, just that football bubble. I want different people, different things going off. And if you've got a deadline to it on an assignment, you've automatically got to shift your focus. And then the other one is, yeah, I'm going to set up a charity which will be up and running the new year, which will be interesting. The amount of work you're doing in football and you're doing events, charity events, and I can be honest, there's not many what you follow up on or even get feedback on in terms of have you done any good, or it's either something put on by an organisation, something put on by the football club. The only one I can really remember getting good satisfaction out of was Barnsley Hospice, because I was at the club a long time, knew the area.
Yeah.
It was quite a longer affiliation and I was there a few times. So it's more along that really, me doing things that I can get a bit of satisfaction out of and helping other people. And when you're out of work, like now, the other reason is straight away then I've got two focuses going off and I never want to feel like I'm coming in, what's now, what's next? Yeah. I've always got something I can jump into.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of very quick fire quiz questions in a second. But my last main question is just, what is Myanmar like as a place?
That costs some bother, that trip. I thought I'd done about talking about that place. What, as a place?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. So the people were fantastic. Like, fantastic. As an experience, really good in terms of that. Listen, it was a business trip. It was nothing. We got no football benefit out of it whatsoever. It was purely a business trip. And could have done without it with the stress it caused, you know, a lot of players and things like that. But yeah, I'm glad I went. It was
good experience.
Good experience, yeah. And good people. And do you know what put a lot of smile on a lot of people's faces as well, which when all the drama and everything negative's going off, it's probably forgotten and you probably overlook it. So yeah, the people we came into contact with are fantastic.
That's what it's all about. Right, Paul, using the website Transfermarkt, which has a lot of good stats, I'm going to ask you some questions. The first one is, who's made the most appearances under you as a manager?
Oh.
Which player?
Mark Roberts.
It's not Mark Roberts.
Adam Davis.
Adam Davis is correct.
Consecutive. Does he get the record consecutive as well? I think he's got the consecutive record, yeah.
My own records don't stretch to that, but I'm sure he did if you say so. Now, the second question is most appearances from an outfield player. I know you're going to say, and it's not him.
It's not him.
No. Someone we've spoken about not
Hamill,
long ago.
Hamill.
Adam Hamill. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're 0 from 2 so far with your first guesses. Who scored the most goals under you? I mean, most of your strikers have been whipped away from you, but this lad stuck around long enough to score a fair
Tom Bradshaw.
Is not correct. Sam Winnell scored.
Oh, yeah.
That second half of that season. I was watching the compilation.
I think he got 11 before he left as well.
Yeah.
There you go. Peanuts as well.
He went, thank you for forgetting that. Who got the most assists?
Connor.
By miles as well. He's on like 25 on the
set plays.
Yeah. The youngest player that you've given a debut to?
Josh Key.
Ryan Edmondson.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
16, yeah, last game of the season.
There you go. Yeah.
16. Was he 16?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Two more. One positive, one negative. We'll start with a good one. There's one team you've managed against three times in your career and won all three.
Is there?
Yeah. And two of them were important, famous games.
Walsall.
Correct.
Yeah.
Walsall. Yeah. Oh, that glorious playoff semi-final.
Three won the league as well, yeah.
Yeah. And there's one team you've managed against three times or more and lost every time against.
Lost.
One team and manager. Who's not there anymore, but was there all five times.
Five times?
Yeah.
So, geez, five times?
Must have played them in the cup or something.
No.
Slavisa's Fulham.
Fulham, yeah.
Yeah. Good side. Good side, to be fair.
Got away with murder. Oh, well, no, we did. We were battering them and then we had a man sent off stupidly. They got away with murder, yeah.
There you go. Paul, I'm very grateful for your time. I hope you've enjoyed this. I mean, I was going to say it's media work, which you've been doing a bit more of, but it's a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is different. Yeah.
It's not like your Sky Sports news slot.
No.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
No, it's good. Enjoyed it. It is different. More relaxed, different questions.
Well, I've loved it, and I'm sure that the listeners will too. So thank you very much. And hopefully next time we talk, it'll be with you as head coach slash manager of an EFL club or somewhere else.
Be nice.